Ladies and gentlemen, we are proud to welcome back as our special guest, Mr. Robert Nathan, distinguished author of Portrait of Jenny, who will narrate part two of the premiere performance of his latest novel, Sir Henry, on Romance. Romance, transcribed stories of love and adventure, of excitement and daring do. Continuing this week, part two of two broadcasts devoted to the delightful adventures of a workaday knight in the ninth century, with the noted American author, Mr. Robert Nathan, as our narrator, and Mr. J. Novello as Sir Henry.
To begin with, there was Sir Henry, an ordinary working knight, his steed Ponderer and his hound Manfred, who also was no longer as young as he once was. Then the Lady Alizan was added, when Sir Henry slew the dragon which held her captive, and life was no longer simple. Alizan was blonde and fair, and she had a one-track mind.
Shall we be married presently?
And finally, there was Megan, Lady Megan of the green eyes and the twilight hair. Sir Henry won her, along with a suit of armor, a horse, and a feather bed, merely by cracking open the head of her sir knight when he wasn't looking. Megan had a one-track mind, too, but it ran in a different direction.
Were your quest to lead you even to the fearsome lands beyond the western sea, I would follow you gladly, so long as it's for honor and renown, and for the spirit's sake.
They had ridden all day long through the dappled sunshine of the forest. Now in the late afternoon they came over the crest of a hill, and below them was the city of Chichester, the towers of its cathedral tangled in the rosy rays of the setting sun. Leaving his ladies to their own devices, Sir Henry set out to keep a promise he had made to Alizan, and to have his armor serviced. It was evening before Sir Henry returned to the inn to find his ladies waiting for him.
Now you just sit down and let me help you off with your boots.
I have a present for you, Henry.
Why, thank you, Megan. A silver spur. Just one?
Well, I could not afford two.
I don't see why you give him a spur, for he will only jab his horse with it or his own backside, and not his spirit at all.
That is a very horrid remark, and I would not have made.
Maybe not, but I did. And now, my dear husband, I also have a present for you.
Oh, how nice. Oh, a stone hot water bottle.
There is nothing like a warm bed to draw a man home, and no one is at his best with cold feet, however inclined.
I too have been shopping. Alison, my dear, for you.
A porringer, a silver porringer with my name on it in writing. With this I shall be able to start my housekeeping. It is our first piece of furniture.
You forget the feathered bed I won along with Megan.
Second-hand goods.
Oh?
Oh, and Megan, for you.
Oh, Sir Henry, what I've always wanted. A lute, an Irish lute for my very own.
Oh, give us a song.
Well, I don't know how to play it yet.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. Yes. Oh, and now, ladies, I have another surprise for you in the courtyard.
My carriage! Oh, Henry, you kept your promise. You bought me a carriage.
What's that for?
So that I may ride.
What's the matter with the horse?
But, Henry, the front and rear seats are facing each other. That doesn't give one much privacy.
It was designed for balance, not privacy.
Two women and one man. Kindly tell me where the balance is in that situation.
Nevertheless, the next morning, with Sir Henry's shield strapped to the roof of the carriage, the knight and his ladies creaked out of Chichester and into the forests to the north. Manfred the Hound was off through the woods, and Ponderer the Horse turned to his harness mate, Simpkins.
Isn't that the dog, Manfred?
Yes, and he sounds like he's in some sort of trouble. He is. He's being chased by a boar. A great wild boar.
And he's leading him straight toward us. Well, now what are we to do?
Don't worry. Your master, Sir Henry, will protect us.
Well, I shouldn't count on that if I were you.
Henry! He's running underneath the carriage. Hurry!
Well, just a minute. As soon as I fasten this breastplate and get my spear.
It will be too late by then.
Go away, you filthy beast. Go away.
Give me the water bottle. I will throw it at you.
You'll break it, and you'll have nothing to keep you warm next winter.
He's about to charge, I'm afraid.
Do you mind if I use your feather bed?
Why?
Well, that's the way they fight bulls in Spain.
Well, do as you please, but be quick about it. Here he comes.
Pete! Fight this! Oh, good boy, Simpkins, good boy.
What's that?
He got too close to Simpkins' hind legs, and Simpkins head at him with a kick.
I'm glad to see how it is done in Spain, but I do not think it is a proper sport for ladies. That quilt will take a great deal of mending.
I wouldn't have believed that a maid in a featherbed quilt could have won such a victory.
It was merely that he was nearest to me. A moment later and you would have put him to the steel.
And there you go again, making a hero of him.
Why, so he is. And I'm surprised that you don't know it.
I know he would have broken his hot water bottle if I had not stopped him.
Would you count a stone jug higher than a man's honor?
His honor is loosed on a horse, as I've told him before.
That is a crude observation.
Oh, well, I'm not as spiritual as you.
Well, I'm not so spiritual that I'm eager to get to heaven before my time. Why, you sat screaming. Who was it killed the boar?
Simpkins.
Ladies, please.
And so Sir Henry and his entourage journeyed north until at last they came to Devizes, where King Anselm held court. And there they found many other knights and ladies gathered for a tournament of love. Although Alison had never seen such pageantry, such gaiety, such feasting and fun, it did not seem to raise her spirits much, and before the evening's dancing was half over, she fell altogether silent.
What is it, my dear? Perhaps you are unused to this rich food.
It is not my body, but my soul that is sick. Beauty is only an illusion. All of this must end. All of us must die and perish in the dark.
Oh, dear me, what a time to turn liverish.
I am not liverish, but I am tired.
Then come along, and I shall see you to your bed.
You don't mind, Henry?
Oh, certainly not. I'll come too.
Oh, no, no. You stay a while and enjoy yourself.
Well, then, good night, my dear.
Below, in the buttery just off the great hall, Sir Henry had finished his nightcap and was beginning on one for the road, when a kindly old gentleman with a great white beard addressed him.
I trust you are enjoying yourself?
Oh, indeed I am, thanks to my excellent host, King Anselm, whom I have never met, and to his tournament, which I mean to avoid like the plague.
Indeed, I did not take you for a feeble knight, or perhaps you lack an adequate mount.
Oh, no. I am all too adequately mounted. But were you the king himself and invited me in person to enter the jousts, I would have to decline.
Well, then, I am the king.
Oh, sire, I did not know.
Oh, arise, sir knight, and tell me your reason.
Well, I have two ladies, and if I were to come out victor in the joust, I must crown one of them Queen of Beauty.
I see.
For one of these ladies is my wife, though we have never been cathedral wed. But the other is no less my responsibility, I having won her from her lord in combat. One is the friend of my heart, and the other of my dreams. So to crown one queen and leave the other sitting uncrowned in the public gaze would be an unknightly thing to do. Nor could I crown a stranger and shame them both.
Well, then, even if you will not enter the tournament, at least promise me you will stay for the banquet afterwards, eh? Oh, we've arranged a very interesting program, including a discourse on love, which I'd be glad to have you join.
Well, I should be delighted to, though I do not think I can add anything to the general knowledge of the subject.
Oh, that doesn't matter, since no one knows very much about it anyway.
So, at the banquet following the tournament, Sir Henry found himself seated a little above the salt, but not so much as to be noticeable or embarrassing, while the ladies Alison and Megan were seated with the other gentlewomen in the gallery. After the last scrap of food had been scraped from the table to the hounds waiting beneath it, and the flagons once more filled with mead, the discussion of love began. Dr. Schlesinger of Quibi, the court sage, was analytical. The troubadour, Sir Variant, was sentimental. The champion of the tournament, Sir Anist of Aminway, spoke in a muscular prose. And then it was Sir Henry's turn.
Your Majesty, noble lords, knights, ladies, and gentlemen, after the great speeches I have heard here this evening, I am somewhat loath to follow, since I have but little knowledge of the subject of tonight's discussion. For I think that love is a searching and a quest for something far away, and is, like fame and fortune, to be found only along the northern marches or in the south ridings. Or perhaps it is still more distant in those western lands beyond the sea where the great monsters are. Or it is expected tomorrow, or remembered from yesterday. And so there must ever be a sadness about it, as one feels in the spring with its sweetness and its sorrow. And that is all I have learned about it, my lords and ladies, in my travels, that it is a distant singing and a sound of peace.
So saying, he sat down amidst silence, and in the gallery Megan bit her nails, and Alison quietly wept. Next day, the tournament being over, Sir Henry and his ladies set out once more upon their travels, burdened with many presents from the good King Anselm.
Henry, I think you'd better find us a dry roof somewhere before winter sets in. Mm.
Perhaps we should seek a warm spot on the Cornish coast and winter in the carriage.
That might be all right for you, but I shall need more room.
More room, my dear?
It is too bad no one asked me my opinion of love and marriage, because I could have told them.
Told them what?
That it is a state to which a woman gives herself wholly and receives in return some instruction in cooking and a baby.
Sir Henry was not a man to shirk his responsibilities. He looked everywhere for a small castle or keep, not too strongly defended, which he could win for himself and his growing family. But there was nothing available. At last, after more than a week of house hunting, he came upon a solid farmhouse, by the side of which stood a large and menacing figure dressed in rusty armor and with his visor down. Unhitching Ponderer from the wagon, Sir Henry mounted the charger and approached the baleful knight.
I am Sir Henry of Brentwood. I charge you, whoever you are, to defend yourself and your house. Will you defend? Will you mount, or shall we fight upon the ground?
What is holding you up?
This cursed fellow won't talk to me. He won't agree upon the rules.
Well, then make them up as you go along.
Make them up? Oh, very well, very well. My dears, it is quite possible I may fall a victim of this dour householder and to my desire to provide you both with a home.
remember me, and teach our children to be proper men and women, depending on their sex.
I did not expect to have so many.
Sir Henry clapped spur to Ponderer, who sprang nimbly forward, and Sir Henry's lance, truly aimed for once, rang squarely on the householder's pauldron, lifting him into the air and toppling him over. At which his armor came apart and strewed the fields with his insides, which turned out to be merely bundles of straw.
Good heavens! You've conquered a scarecrow!
I'm glad he did not beat Sir Henry then, for it would have made me sneeze horribly.
Since the farmhouse had no other defender and was indeed quite deserted, Sir Henry and his ladies moved in and set up housekeeping. And as the summer days shortened, Sir Henry busied himself putting a tower to his farmhouse and building a moat around it, so that by the first heavy frost he could truthfully say that his home was his castle, albeit a small one. And Alizan went about her wifely duties and was gentle and quiet and happy.
It's my own home, Henry. My very own, and I love it. Abigail will love it, too.
Abigail? I had hoped it might be Gareth.
Abigail.
And so it was. Abigail. And there was only Megan to help when she arrived in early March.
I have called you many names, Megan, and not all of them friendly. But in the end, it was you who held me and went with me as far as you could through the dark valley. What shall I call you now? Sister and friend?
Oh, call me Aunt Megan.
And then it was spring, and Sir Henry and Megan walked in the garden together.
It is questing weather, for sure.
I am not thinking of a long quest, only a very small one, and then home again, just to see what lies over the hill.
I know.
I thought you would understand, but I doubt if Alison will.
She may not care. She has Abigail.
That's true. I had forgotten. A darling child and a true Brentwood. Still, Alison will miss me, I think.
Well, of course she will. We'll all miss you, all three of us.
Do you mean to say you're not going with me?
Not this time, my dear.
But it was always you who spoke the bravest.
Perhaps I did, but it was you who did the deeds.
Oh, it seems to me I was always unhorsed.
You did your best, and so you always will. But a woman's happiness is in her home, and Alison has such happiness that it's spills a little onto me.
But the grail, which you always felt was the utmost quest.
Oh, I'm not in such a fret to find it. Since I've held in my hand the little silver cup from which Abigail spoons her porridge.
Sir Henry made his preparations slowly. For although he was determined to go off on a quest of some kind, a weekend or overnight, a good deal of the pleasure seemed to have gone out of it. But at last everything was in readiness, and there were only goodbyes to be said. He found Alizan in the kitchen, preparing Abigail's gruel.
Are you sure you want me to go?
Now let me see. One spoonful of salt, one cup of milk.
This is my last quest, Alison.
I shall miss you, Henry, for I've grown used to having you about, and in many ways you've been a comfort to me. You've been a dear husband. And if anything would happen to you, one teaspoonful of sweetening, two of water. Don't just stand there. If you're going, go.
So Sir Henry went. Megan wasn't around to say goodbye to, and Manfred hid under the baby's cradle when he was called. So Sir Henry went alone. And alone in the misty forest, he sat before his dying fire that night, and never had he been more lonely. Tomorrow he would return home, no matter how foolish he might appear. He would quit the business of knighthood. He would retire to his farm tomorrow. But there was still the night to be gotten through. And it seemed to Sir Henry that there were shapes in the mist, shapes that floated back and forth, here and there, until they came together into one shape, dimly seen, but frightening and horrid. Sir Henry's knees knocked one upon the other, but he got to his feet and challenged the shape.
Who are you? Who's there?
I am your enemy, Henry of Brentwood.
You know my name, but I do not know yours. Are you ogre, cockatrice, wizard, or knight? You do not answer. I will not battle with you.
You cannot help it.
I will turn back rather than meet you.
You cannot. Turn back to Alisane and you will find me with Magan. Fly to Magan and I am with Alisane. You must do battle with me sooner or later, for I bar your way in every direction.
It seems to me I have heard your voice somewhere before.
It is the sound of your own voice you hear.
Yes. Yes, and I don't like it.
I know. You have always preferred distant singing and the sound of peace.
I said that, the tournament of love?
Yes, you were quite eloquent. But you wounded Alisane to the heart, who loved you. And Megan, too.
Did they really love me?
Don't you know?
I could never believe it, since I could never think so well of myself.
Draw your sword.
But where are you? I cannot see you.
You have never seen me, Henry. Yet I have never been far from you.
Who are you, then? What is your name that I must fight you here in the dark?
My name is known to you, Henry. It is yourself.
And from nowhere that he could see, his foe's sword slashed across his coat of mail and tore into his chest. And Sir Henry fell backward and lay stretched on the black, moist earth. And it seemed to him that Alisane was there, bending over him.
I'm dying, dear Alisane.
You were not lucky this time, my darling.
No one is lucky against himself.
And then Alisane's face drifted away in the mist, and Megan leaned over him.
Well, now, you will see the Grail after all.
Why, so I will. But I will be thinking of Abigail's little porringer.
They found him lying there the following day. There were no wounds upon his body, and he was generally considered to have died of a seizure of the heart. At Megan's entreaty, his hot water bottle was buried with him. At Alisane's request, his one silver spur.
Romance is produced and directed by William Frug. Sir Henry by Robert Nathan was adapted for radio by William N. Robeson, starring Jane Avello as Sir Henry, with Mr. Nathan as our narrator. Ellen Morgan appeared as Alisane and Betty Harford as Megan. Featured in the cast were Hans Conried, Pinto Colvig, and Paul Fries. Special music composed and conducted by Jerry Goldsmith. This is Dan Cubberly inviting you to listen to Romance, transcribed next week at this same time. Every Sunday night over CBS Radio, Gene Autry invites all his friends to visit him at Melody Ranch for a half hour of songs and stories about the Old West. Just turn on your radio and tune in the Gene Autry Show tomorrow night. Be sure to be listening when Gene rides straight into his latest Western adventure. Stay tuned now for Gunsmoke, which follows immediately over most of these same stations.